I'm going to be for coordination. It falls on me this time round, and Chairperson Pinky Poza will take coordination responsibility for the budget next February in respect of the meeting that's equivalent to the same one as now. So we welcome all of you, and we're going to hand over to the Minister and DG in a moment. But before we do, I think Chairperson Comrade Charles wants to say a few words, and maybe Comrade Pinky wants to say a word or two. Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs. Welcome to all of the members. Special welcome to our honourable minister and deputy minister and the team from the National Treasury. Also in our midst, special welcome to our nine provincial chairpersons of finance in the nine provinces. They're all sitting here in a block. And thank you for honouring this meeting. They were here on Tuesday, they are here yesterday, and they are here now. And they are coming for the briefing with the Division of Revenue Management Bill as well. So that's the link between Parliament and the provinces, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Well, Honourable Minister and Honourable Deputy Minister, I would like to welcome you and also congratulate the... I would like to follow from the Speaker, the Minister. Indeed, listening to, because to our constituency out there, because we are public representatives, one can conclude that everybody is happy, but then they are looking forward to, you know, to better things coming and fresh thinking in the budget lines. But indeed, we are looking forward to also learning from you and you taking the budget to greater height. Thank you.
Minister, I know you're going to say this is your main speech on UNDC days. Parliament being very fruitful in the way we spend our money has got a senior council working on an opinion about whether you qualify to be a maiden speaker in the context where you're a former minister and have appeared on this committee many times. But we should also point out to you, Minister, you know the norm. Yes, we should be sedate, but you shouldn't be provocative either. So when I mean provocative, I mean whatever you allocate to municipalities in terms of your framework, I hope that Mr. Ndusi is not negatively affected. That's my... So don't provoke me. Okay, over to you, Minister. And once again, we echo, as our committee has already done, the Standing Committee of Finance, our congratulations and good wishes to you. We have four committees here, and to remind you, they are all the MEC, not even the chairpersons of the various provinces here too. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much. I've never experienced Cape Town being so hot. I hope the drought doesn't return. So I'm looking forward to being at home where it's at least 1,500 meters above sea level and much cooler and nicer. My horse roof. It's much colder than where Honorable Shivambu comes from. He comes from Kamalamulele there. It's very hot there. Which partially explains a lot of things. So thank you very much for welcoming me here. Very much appreciated. Something that strikes me about some of the things that honorable members are still doing is that I just recall when we started the post-apartheid government in 1994. Then it was a government of national unity. And we talked about a number of things, one of which was the belt tightening. And we called it a six-pack. this is going to happen, this expenditure must be curtailed, so on and so forth, as they say in the Eastern Cape. And so I come back to, and then we talked about Minister Jeff Khadebe was Minister of Public Works, And then we talked about the need to do an audit of all state-owned assets to determine which are core and which are non-core, 1994. So I come back here, and I hear the same thing. And I wonder whether I've been in a coma or I died, I'm now a reincarnate, or what exactly has happened in all these years I've been away. Of course, I'm sure you had other priorities, but you're back to where we were. And that's where we are with this medium-term budget policy statement. We are at a point where we need to focus on managing our public finances properly, such that we do away with unnecessary, fruitless, and fraudulent expenditure, and focus more on how we can maintain and improve government service, but at the same time leave some room for investment expenditure. Because that's where the growth really is going to come from, the investment expenditure. So the DG was going to take you through the actual presentation, but I'm told I must learn to focus now on the political issues and less on the technical issues. But so I do give DG that space. But so a couple of things. You'll see from the presentation that we re-emphasize what we talked about yesterday, about the backdrop, which is influencing what we're trying to do. Very disappointing economic growth rates in South Africa, an issue that should concern all of us. If you recall, at some point in the 10 years after 1994, I think the economy grew even to levels of about 5%. And in fact, at that stage, the potential output for South Africa was around 4.5%, and we had actually gone above the potential output, and we began to have some supply side constraints, if you recall, at the time. Now, of course, the potential output has clearly come down quite significantly, but at least we need to close that output gap in the short term, but that's going to be very tough. So with that low economic growth scenario and the reduced tax revenues, we clearly have a problem on the expenditure side. And that's why you notice that the word reprioritization must have appeared too many times in my statement yesterday, because that's what you have to do, to reprioritize and adjust in a situation like this. And that's what we have to do. You will see again from the DG's presentation that if we don't do anything about our situation, in the outer years, we're likely to face a debt to GDP ratio at or above 60% of GDP. That one?
Yes.
Of GDP. When that happens, you are very close to having very serious conversations with the IMF. And they're going to come and take over the running of your finances through a heavy-handed structural adjustment program. And we don't want to be there. So whether you like the IMF or not, ideologically, practically, when you get into a debt trap, that's where you're going to end up. You can shout and scream and dance and do whatever. That's where you're going to end up. We don't want to be there. So Party will explain. We're really focusing on those growth enhancing initiatives that hopefully should help us move ahead. But we have to clamp down on fraudulent, unnecessary, and fruitless expenditure. So, next point I want to make in the acting commissioner of SARS this year, I think SARS was broken whilst we looked at it. We protested here and there and so on, but we were here in many corner when that thing happened. At least I can say, and that's the many echo. But Nina, many corner. Got broken whilst we were looking. So I think it says something in future about what we must not allow to happen. But we're trying to rebuild SARS and its tax collecting capacity. Without that capacity to collect tax, obviously there will be no revenue that's going to allocate. That said, I think that you'll have noticed that there were some in the markets who were not very happy about what they saw as the fiscal stance. Nothing we can do about it. We can't spin our way out of the numbers. That's what the numbers are showing us, and we're to tell it as it is. Isaiah chapter 58, or no, Isaiah, the numbers told the story, and we have to live with that reality and work hard to try and change the situation. So, honorable members, I look forward to working with you in the future, and I'll get used to the rhythm. Just as I've been away, I'm used to board meetings. Now I get used to committee meetings, and trying to understand how people see how the DA approaches issues. EFF from time to time, how they bend the tables and so on. I just need to get to understand that. Because we don't do that in the boardroom, so I'll need to understand how it works and how you heckle a minister when they're doing a maiden speech and so on. But I'll get you, don't worry, I'll adjust. Get you. Yes, the ACDP was good, they played along with me, so it's fine. But I'll get you. Don't worry. But thank you very much. I look forward to working with you, and I'll head over to the DG.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, honorable members. I will take you through the presentation. Just to reiterate a few things that Minister mentioned. Clearly and certainly, we are at a crossroads. We're in a very difficult economic environment, and we then are confronted very serious fiscal choices that we have to come up with, and if we don't do anything about it, would be difficult for us to sustain ourselves. Economic growth is what it is. We've revised it down to 0.7% in the current year. And what is making it very difficult is that the challenging global environment continues. With the trade tensions that we see between of the large economies in the world, that clearly tells you that we are in for a long haul in terms of really facing headwinds of a global economy that's not performing. We are also saying we are committed to a broad fiscal sustainability path that we chose some time ago. But as you can see, there are slippages in the budget. The Minister mentioned one such on the tax revenue side. We've revised the tax revenue down, and partly due to some refund that we kept for some time, and we can explain that. Expenditure ceiling remains intact. That's what has been the key anchor of our fiscal policy, and I think we have to continue doing that. One of the slippages that is worrying is that, you know, debt is projected to stabilize at a higher number than, you know, initially projected at 59.6% in 23-24 financial year. I want us to circle this, that honourable members, we should note for later as part of my presentation that expenditure is still growing by 7.8% above inflation, underline above inflation, on average over the 3 years, from 1.8 trillion to 2.1 trillion. We continue to prioritize that which is critical, education and health and welfare. We cannot just sit back and bury our heads in the sand, but we have to do something about it, and I think we got guidance from the President a few months ago when he announced a plan to stimulate the economy. And you know, the key issue there is we have to get out of the low growth trap that we find ourselves in and start doing great things, including creating employment where possible, come up with projects that will really open up opportunities that may be there to unlock growth and also to create employment, setting up the infrastructure fund, and ensure that we do something about those initiatives that we think will bring us the necessary growth. And finally, also deal with key challenges in education and health and also address the challenges faced by some municipalities. And we also say broadly in this budget, the minister mentioned and he gave an example about SARS, that state institutions are being repaired and renewed, and not only in SARS, but in many other government departments, including other entities. We know there are some serious governance challenges that existed, and these are across the public sector, and we have to deal and do something about it. This slide, too, basically just confirms what I said earlier about the global outlook, which is less supportive to our domestic economy. And so we show some statistics there in terms of where advanced countries are vis-a-vis our country, vis-a-vis the developing nations and other countries. As I said, we have revised growth downwards. And over the medium term, we expected to recover to 2.3% in 2021. And we think as investment rises and as confidence rises, we will clearly realize that 2.3%. It's low, it's not what it should be. We know what it was like to grow at 5.6% a few years ago, and ideally that's where we would like ourselves to be, or even more than that if we can. But clearly we know there are some things that we have to do. The pressure on consumer prices from administered prices in the form of energy and fuel, and again, what we are saying, we cannot just look at it, we have to do something about it. Inflation is around 5.6% in 2019, that's the projection that we put in, increasing to about 5.4% of the MTF. But remember I said budgets are growing at 7.8%. So you've got an inflation which is lower than what we're budgeting for. And we have to then identify where the problems and challenges are in terms of our spending. And if we have room to look at what's possible, because clearly we are not sustainable moving forward in avoiding what the minister said about the IMF, possibly. And I don't think we have to take that lightly. I was fortunate on your behalf as South Africa and the country. I represented South Africa at the World Bank for a number of years. And the World Bank and the IMF are just across each other. Same board, in fact, not the same board, but in some cases, some chairs just cross the road for board meetings, etc. And I was sitting in the board, representing 21 countries. Now, we know how difficult it is to put up a strong case for a country in Africa when clearly either the country is seeking a loan or the country has to be on an IMF program, and what conditionalities, reluctantly so, as a board, we had to agree to. And it was tough what we learned. This was worse, obviously, in the early days, so in the structural adjustment days, early days. But clearly, we don't want to be there. We don't want to be there. Something that we should avoid at all costs. So if we don't do anything about it, and we are irresponsible as we approach management of our public finances, we may find ourselves there. Now, the President announced the stimulus, the plan to stimulate the economy, and we think there are some growth-enhancing reforms that we've identified, we're saying there's work around restructuring the electricity sector. There's certainty, at least the decision has been taken around the licensing or and optioning or releasing of high demand spectrum. The charter has been approved by power by cabinet, and we are amending some visa regulations that will do. So we think by just doing some of these basic things, this is low hanging fruit, we should be able to actually get on to the other side. There's some reprioritization that we made, about 50 plus billion rand, spending across conditional grants, across programs that are not performing, introducing one or two things, but it's all within the allocations that we have in the baseline. And let's like, try to identify some of the possibilities, and that will unlock some of the potential. And in the book, we are expanding a bit more. Infrastructure value. Now, I must clearly state that the fund has not been established as yet. The fund has not been established. The president and ourselves, presidents and ourselves will be setting up a team. Not that we have not started talking or engaging with it. The book has outlined some of the thinking on the fund. It's not new money. It's money that is there in baseline budget, infrastructure spending budget, that's spread out across municipalities, provinces, and public entities, national departments, and another half of it, so the total is about 855 billion, half of it is in state-owned companies. Now, the idea there is that we have to be, and of course we'll come to you, honorable members, to actually come up with some innovative ways within the law that will really unlock some private sector partnerships that are possible and that we have to think ourselves around. We're talking about blended financing options. So I think we are finalizing this fund and the modalities of the fund and the framework. And when this is ready, we'll come back to you once we have cleared it up in terms of what exactly. But the principle is that it's important that we leverage on what we have to attract MDBs, multilateral development banks, to attract private banks, to attract DFIs, etc. And I know when we interact with the Appropriations Committee, the key question that we have been asked by some of you honourable members over the years, in the last 3 years at least, that you are putting about 4 billion rand in the New Development Bank. Others call it the BRIC Bank, the New Development Bank. What are we getting for it? China, Brazil, India, Russia lately, everyone is taking up, but our take up in terms of opportunities and available financing, and cheap financing for that matter, leaves much to be desired. So I think this should allow us to think differently around how we approach infrastructure financing. There's also...
Let me just amplify the point he's making, and it's going to deal with inflation. It's about project identification and preparation. Let me add, and credibility. So preparation, identification, preparation, credibility of projects. So when I was, before I was fired from the BRICS Bank, I was on the board, I was chairman of the audit committee. And so these countries would make requests for funding of projects. And the technical team at the bank would then look at this and make a recommendation to the board. Our first project in South Africa was an ESCOM project. They said somewhere in the southwest of Johannesburg, which was to be the evacuation of renewable energy and plugging into the ESCOM lines. It was the first group of the BRICS Bank loans were for green projects. So in the middle of trying to work on the technicalities of the project and its preparation, the state capture thing came up. And the code of ethics of the Brics Bank did not allow the banks to extend loans to entities which are plagued with corruption. So it was put on hold. I don't know what has happened to that. And the second one was the extension of the Durban Harbour, which made a lot of sense, that the harbour needs to be extended and modernized. But it was overpriced at $500 million. And again, that caused some problems. So fortunately now at least we have one of the senior treasury officials has been appointed as the head of the NDP office in Johannesburg. 35 pages. So he has gone there to help on this, some of this technical work, preparation, identification, preparation, credibility projects. That's very important because if we don't sharpen our skills in that field, Gigi can do as much as he can in terms of allocating funds for projects. If the identification and preparation is poor, then we're in trouble. But he's going to talk about it later.
Thank you, Minister. Without spending more time on this, I think, yeah, I continue, by the way, Minister Governor, chairing that committee, the audit committee that you left. I took over from you. And I feel bad because I sit, five of us sit behind the board table and we'll be doing that in the next week or so. We'll be approving projects other than South African projects. But we should do, and because this is disheartening if you think about it, China does not need the money. It's more money for them. They actually paid in advance their subscriptions. But they take off. What do they take? They don't only take the money, but they take the expertise that comes with it and the monitoring. And I think it's something that we have allowed ourselves at least and convinced ourselves that we have to look at this. And that's why in this budget, we have put in 625 million rands as part of the reallocation, by the way, to the DBSA, GTech and to the PICC to strengthen our project preparation, because one of the things is that we are bad at doing that. We came up with something called the BFI, Budget Facility for Infrastructure. We launched it about 2 years ago. It's doing very well because what we are attempting to do was to let departments come to us, to this facility, and apply and say, we've got projects. And this facility is basically to appraise. It's a process in our budget process that appraises that we don't just fund for something that has not been properly thought through. As I said before to the committee last year, 43 projects came, one is qualified. And that's, you know, in the last round. The second round closed on the 31st of August this year. Again, some leave much, you know. So we're saying we have to then step back a little bit, and that's what we're doing. And this fund will help us do that, by the way. Have our planning process in place, appraise projects, in some cases do proper feasibility studies, and determine whether we have to embark on this or not. So we will be really moving at great speed around this thing. And then we can open ourselves up, because we think the private sector will be interested in some of the projects, not all. Social projects, we know we'll have to carry on our budget if we need to find it out. Because in there we are fighting a system that says, we leave our guarantees. You know, for instance, in the BRICS, that's what we say. Leave the guarantees on the strength of the project. Let's fund it so that we reduce our guarantees. So we will come back to you in terms of finalizing some of the thinking around this fund. Finally, the President's recovery plan focuses on addressing municipal social infrastructure. We went in greater detail yesterday, identified examples about potholes in roads and things, and you know, sewerage that's not functioning and so properly. So we are, this budget also tries to look at those interventions, and we hope from there we should be able to kickstart ourselves into really proper engaging and making sure that we develop our own community. Revenue outlook has deteriorated, and this is something that, again, we put up front there. The shortfall in 2018-19 will amount to about 27.4 billion. We've got colleagues from SARS, colleagues from tax colleagues who can go into more detail in terms of the refund issue there. Revenue is projected to fall short of budget estimate by 24 in 2018-19 and 33 in 2021. And as you can see, we've got a table in one of the annexures there where tax buoyancies has been revised down for the medium term, and you can get into the detail. There was a study on VAT, we've got a panel, they made recommendations. We proposed zero rating on flour. We're also saying sanitary pads should be zero rated, including making small inroads in providing for the equitable share to make sure that we actually roll out free sanitary pads to at least those in poor households, especially in schools in particular, in some areas. So equitable share is increased. Small amount, not big, 79 million. And we think moving forward, because some provinces already started. Moving forward, we will obviously have to look at that, and then through some formal reprocessing as we move along, increase that amount. Fiscal framework, as I said, we maintain the expenditure ceiling. We avoided increasing major tax instruments. Now, when you look at CIT or PIT or even VAT, we think unless the economic environment requires. Now, in that statement, we're saying a lot. Because what we mean when I say unless the economic environment, if we become reckless to a point in terms of how we manage public finances, to a point where clearly we don't have a choice, or if we don't impose on ourselves serious restrictions, and we might find ourselves in a situation where we'll need more. Because we'll have people, either we'll have people who won't be paid, we'll have hospitals. This time it's not only be about beds and linen, but it will also be about doctors, and we might not have a functioning system. So again, we will avoid tax increases for now, hoping that we will be able to really take tough decisions as we move forward. Retain national, we'll retain national department compensation system. We are not putting any new money in there, and as it is, we obviously are. When you look at the newspapers today, there are issues around personal budgets and how we have viewed them. The consolidated free fiscal framework as presented to you, you can see the budget balance increasing from a revised amount of 4% to minus 4.2%. And that's something that presented. And your debt to GDP is increasing. And that number, that 59.6% number is in 22, 23. So, but for the three outer years, this is what our debt outlook looks like. In-year expenditure ceiling is also maintained. By breaking it, we have managed a lot. We will be able to deal with the pushbacks. So we were able to do some shifts.
Sorry, allow me to be rude. You've exceeded your 30 minutes. But because of the first input, you won't be rigid. 5 or 10 minutes more, is that okay? Because when members feel they don't get chomped up. Sorry? Yeah, it's only halfway through. That's my concern. So are we guided by the committee? Normally the norm is 30, 5 minutes to 10 minutes. Is that okay, extra 10 minutes? Fine, thank you.
No, thanks, Charles. I'll be very quick. So we've got that. And then the primary deficit narrows over the MTF. The primary deficit, and again, we explained in detail in this, and this slide simply shows you where we are at. Now, this is what I was talking about, the debt outlook increasing to about 59.6 to 23, 24, 25, but currently we are still below 60% at 58.5 in the current. Compensation remains major part of our spending. We've identified departments, defense, health, education departments, and so just note that. But again, our wage settlement is way above what we can afford, and that's something that we must recognize moving forward. in real terms, you know, inflation was 2%, so it's quite a lot in terms of what you pay, especially if you take into account the full cost. Occupational specific dispensation, OSD, and you factor in the wage settlement that was reached with the labor. So clearly, it remains unsustainable moving forward, and it's something that I think we should be honest enough with ourselves to want to relook at that. Expenditure priorities, learning and culture remain, taking the bulk of the spending, and we've identified that such. And again, of the 1.7 trillion, 15% goes to basic education. So as I said, this budget continues to protect social services, and which is something that we should still be proud of, because we've got huge social challenges in South Africa. Debt service cost is the fastest growing area of spending, and will continue to grow. Again, if we don't do anything about it, 10.9 vis-a-vis what we're spending as a percentage of total, nominal growth across the 3 years. Division of revenue, we made some reprioritization through support basic education, we'll support water and sanitation, electricity, etc. And that's a new framework presented and proposed. State-owned companies are a major risk. We are making proposal to allocate 5 billion to SAA, SA Express 1.2 or so billion, and another 2.9 billion to SAPO. And the reality is that we cannot again bury our heads in the sand. We didn't make any provision for over the FTS. What we are doing is that we have to force the Department of Public Enterprises and the state-owned companies to come to the party insofar as how then do we address essentially what are huge challenges that have been many years of mismanagement. And DP is doing that. So we are having very serious engagements with them between now and budget. We cannot sustain this, and I'm happy that there's options and opportunities. Minister mentioned yesterday where we should allow the private sector to come on and take some of these. There are initial steps to reform some of these, as I said. 400 million in procurement saving, SAA as an example. We lost two colleagues in Treasury, and we lost them to SAA. It was said for us to do that, but we see benefits of Skalk and Kenny Pillay there, because clearly they are there, they resigned, they got a job, we didn't recommend them. Actually, I was asking them not to go at the time. But we can see benefits, because some of the challenges in SAA are around, obviously, middlemen and how they, but they are dealing with that. They are only with the board there. And all we want is proper plans that will really turn the entities around.
This middleman thing you talk about, so you need hires for their things. So instead of going to buy the tires directly from the shop, you buy it through a trader. And then, so you pay the trader and you pay for the tires, rather than going directly to get the tires. Unbelievable stuff.
I'm saying rebuilding state institutions is also key. We are putting some resources to the state capture commission. We also, two years ago, when we were looking for money to fund some of the treasures, especially around free education, we had to cut SARS budget by about 1.5 billion or so. So we're rebuilding that so that SARS can continue to do what they have to do. So clearly, modernization and how they modernize and how they do their work, and we cannot tamper with that. So that's realization. So in here, we are making some reallocations back to SARS. Municipalities, the financial recovery plans are a requirement of law that we have to come up with. And with what we have to do in municipalities, clearly, our approach should be obviously looking at what the AG is saying and what challenges are being faced in municipalities. In contribution, it's what it is. Expenditure ceiling remains. We have to instill some discipline and some pain on us as we relook at our budget into February, because clearly, if what we are putting up out there is not good enough, then clearly we will be in serious financial trouble moving forward as a country. Thank you.
Thank you. very much. Tim, do you want to add anything? Okay, you can slide in the things that you didn't have a chance to say. You know, in the way you answer questions, you know me. But can we have people's hands up? Sorry, do you come to the end? Oh, you're the first one, okay.
Co-chairs, thank you very much. And Minister, for you and your team, thank you for you to be being brutal honest about the South African economic situation. Question. The rebuilding of SARS, what's the action plan? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The program to do that. Thank you.
And the gentleman next, I forgot your name, I'm sorry. Let's have numbers, right, because there's four committees. So, Stanley, we'll go from that. Stanley, the gentleman next to him. Behind is an imam, right? Then it's Floyd, yeah, okay, she's right. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, Floyd, you can add, right? 4. Right, 5 is, what's your name, Steve? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, Gwen, the gentleman, Mr. Mallon, is that his name? 13. Right, and then here we're coming. Don't worry, everybody's got time. You can see Minister, what's at stake. 14, who else? The provincial representatives can also speak. 15. Right, so given the time, can I suggest I'll time everybody, including the chairs, we'll stick to 3 minutes at the first attempt. Is that okay? Because we have to give a chance to reply. So we'll time everybody, including ourselves. So we're starting now with number one. Now that's the biggest challenge we have to
answer. Yeah, but Chair, I'm incoherent. I'm going to be a little bit long-winded. So I don't know whether it's going to
work. As long as you do it.
So unless you give me 4 slots today.
We'll come back, but let's be fair. Right? If 15 people takes an hour, 15 times 3 is 45. Do you want to make it? Colleagues, we can't do it. 3 minutes, that's it. Can we move on, please? We'll come back to second round if we've got time.
Okay, I'll try. Let's try to live with... Chair, first, let's welcome the new minister. We envy him, at the stage. Hopefully, in the next quarter, if he do some magic from Limpopo, we'll get out of the technical recession, seeing the agricultural sector performing differently. So let's hope for that. But I'm going to sound like I'm lamenting, because it's starting to get boring, the stuff that will rain. And I'll try to speak in parables to try to make sense of the things I want to say. For instance, in my previous life, I used to realize that when you meet the Chinese, they had 3 plans with them. There's a 20-year plan that they already know how they're going to implement it. They've got a 10-year plan and the immediate one. So when they meet you, they're not asking you. They're actually convincing you to realize that they're about to do something. So and when the DG speaks like that, you'll have to start to realize that before you see it, all the money in the BRICS bank will be gone. Okay, let me get to the issues. It's the beautiful words versus quantitative easing. The observation will be, are we going to see capital inflows or are we going to see capital outflows? The choice is us. We're not part of the two major forces in the trade war. We can try to find an alternative way to move out of that and make sure that we deal with our own challenges differently. But that cannot be done if there's no alignment with the NDP, and that's where my lamentation starts, Minister. You're new to it. The issue is, if you look at what the NDP wants to achieve and the infrastructure projects that we have, the expenditure patterns and the baselines of government departments down to municipalities, there's not been alignment. And we're preaching to the convention, National Treasury is not the problem in this context. It's how government departments has dealt with it and municipalities themselves. Now, we need a strong hand from somewhere. I don't know if the Planning Commission that can change that, since National Treasury is seen as a super department when it raises this issue. So probably your voice would be different in that collective and change the situation around. I'm happy that you're saying we're going to focus on unused funds, DG, because the stimulus package is not a question of bringing in new money. It's how we're going to deal with issues of prioritization. Now, perhaps, Chair, at some point, not today, we will have then to request as to how it's going to be done so that we can monitor that.
You're
in
3 minutes, study.
We can all emphasize the fact that we are in a difficult place, and there's no doubt about that. I want to welcome the minister and his approach as well, and I think it's very positive, the admittance to a lot of the problems we are facing, because having an ostrich approach and ignoring the problems won't solve them, and I think we've had that for too long. Quickly, Chair, if I can emphasize the following, I think one of the problems we are facing, and Treasury can maybe give us guidance. In every February budget, we have an overestimation of the growth rate. And that has been repeated for a number of years. And that has quite a significant influence on the whole budget process. Because if we overestimate the growth, and is there some plan within Treasury to better, and I know it's difficult to predict, and there's a lot of outside influence and so forth, but is there some type of plan with regards to that. Then, Chairperson, it's positive the prioritization of infrastructure spending and admitting that that is the way to actually grow the economy. The problem, though, that I have is the inability of the implementing agents, our departments and our municipalities, to actually spend that money. And how is that going to be addressed? The social infrastructure program and what was mentioned by the DG is positive with regards to municipalities. But in the same breath, I also heard the minister say yesterday that non-performing departments will be, to a certain extent, punished and their budgets will be reduced. And that has been the method of government all along. But is that actually solving the problem? Because now you're taking away an infrastructure grant, you reducing the budget of a certain department or municipalities because they have slow spending, but you're actually not giving services to the people. It's the people that are suffering. The officials are saying, I have less responsibility now. Is that actually solving the problem? And then very quickly, Chair, the 3.4 billion rand for water infrastructure is very important. But once again, how are we going to make sure that that money is going to be spent? Because we have a significant problem with regards to water leakages, and we're losing millions of kiloliters of water monthly because of that. How are we going to ensure that that is being spent? And then with regards to Eskom, I think it's a national crisis, the fact that there's so many municipalities that are owing Eskom and that cannot pay Eskom. And the approach up until now has been you must sort that out on local government level. But I don't think it can be sorted.
Can you please round up your 3 minutes?
That cannot solve that problem. And it's contributing to our twin deficits, and it has a vicious cycle. Is it not time for national intervention with regards to Eskom and the outstanding debt? And then just quickly check. The 3.2 billion shortfall with regards to the wage bill. Is that not going to be detrimental to not fund that without a plan to say what government departments should do? Because now that is going to affect service delivery.
Okay, number three.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that presentation. Minister, we do see some hope, and we hope that that hope will be converted to action and that we reap the benefits of it. But let me start off by saying, the first issue for me is the issue of jobs, job creation. And what I've identified as a challenge is, and I think we picked up that yesterday, was a large percentage of NSFAS-assisted students that are not passing. The quality of the graduates that we are getting, we're already talking about importing skills when we have such a high percentage of unemployment in the country. I want to know, should we not be diverting our attention to creating quality graduates so that we can fill that skills gap that we seem to have in the country? And one of it is that the Tibet colleges and things are not speaking to the curriculum needs based on the skills that we need in South Africa. Second thing is the issue of corruption, and as you know, it's a very serious problem. I think we haven't even digested the issue of VBS Bank. There's another one now in Shwane with another 12 billion that we're talking about. We haven't even slept, and that's what we are picking up. Now, one of that I've identified is that there appears to be interference, political interference in many of the government institutions at all spheres of government. There is no real separation, although in principle it's supposed to have been between politics and administration. So politicians seem to be controlling what is happening. I think the issue of corruption is underestimated, even though we picked up a hell of a lot, because right from the ground, there appears to be a serious problem right from local level. Corruption starts before the tender is even gone out, I can assure you. That's how bad it is. The other thing is this, we've picked up that we're losing in South Africa, and I think you are correct when you talk about middlemen and things, about 200 billion rand. That was estimated by the previous central procurement. About 200 billion in goods and services in South Africa through either fraud, corruption, or not getting value for money, where you either buy something for 1 rand in one province and 10 rand in the other province, including but not limited to the principle of not giving a tender to the lowest person, because if you're below 15%, I'm told, then they say you may not be able to finish, even though you can prove that for the last 10 years you performed very well, but those contracts are not. But what happens then? Contracts are given to others and they go back to these people to get it done. Middlemen again are making money out of it. I have a serious problem in terms of the basic education, because we've already picked up 15% of the budget. Yes, very good. The quality seems to be a problem. We've gone on oversight. We found major problems. Grade 8 can't read and write. Grade 7, that is the problem we're having. So maybe we need to...
Change you at 3 minutes. Please round up.
1 minute, okay. Minister, something has come to my knowledge, and I'm not sure how much of truth there is in it. We have released a lot of money to this refinery in Mozambique, and we've dealt with it from PIC. There is some information that comes, we are about to release to the PIC hundreds of millions of rand again. Could you please, in the process, look into that and see if you can actually deal with that? And finally...
Mr. Sheikh, thank you. Okay. Very quickly,
okay.
10 seconds.
Finally, I know the what you're putting in terms of infrastructure. We've had major challenges in the infrastructure. Now you're talking about putting getting more qualified people to drive the entire process, but many departments are talking
Mr.
about.
Thank you. I think we have drift of your question.
Oversubscribed.
Thank you. I'm sorry about this, but I'm also going to be stuck with 3 minutes, right?
Thank you, Chair. Example you gave about SAEK procurement practices around the purchase of tires prevalent across all spheres of government. And I think the problem is the whole principle of the state just being a procuring state, like it issues tenders and contracts, it doesn't do anything. I think that is one of the issues that you must look into in terms of the review of what are the functions that the state can directly fulfill and perform without reliance on external service providers. I think that is the most important thing to look into. It can help in terms of dealing with all of those issues. Two is, what informs your position that if we go to 60% debt-to-GDP ratio, will be a case of IMF, because some of the most developed countries, like Japan, is at 200% the debt-to-GDP ratio. The UK is at more than 90%, the US is at more than 70%, France is at more than 70%, a lot of developed countries. And I know that it is not ideal to leave the debt levels in the way they are now. And what practically do you do? Because it looks like the growth strategies that we are talking about are faith-based, like they're not scientific. You just hope that if you do this and that, it will lead to growth. There's no science behind it that they will certainly lead to growth. But also I want to hear you in terms of the whole phenomena of tax avoidance. He never spoke about it, what should be done, where to put legislation in terms of how we should deal with broadly tax avoidance and transfer pricing phenomenon in terms of those issues. And then on the wage bill, I made an observation that it's too huge, there are commitments that are not funded in the MTEF. Can you give an assurance that part of the interventions in stabilizing the wage bill won't lead to retrenchments of public servants? Because public servants are rightfully concerned that you are complaining about the wage bill. Will that lead to their retrenchments as part of stabilizing the wage bill? Let us get clarity in that regard. You never said much in terms of the provision of fee-free education. In terms of in the MTF, how is it going to be financed? Because one of the most difficult items on the budget since the introduction of fee-free higher education has been how is it going to be sustained, to what extent, and who becomes the beneficiary in terms of the quantums that are identified. And the last issue that I want to deal with is the principles of division. Yes, I'm finished. The principles around division of revenue. So in your policy statement, you observe that 113 municipalities adopted and funded budgets. Don't you think that the whole base principle in the manner in which you deal with division of revenue is problematic, because the entire local government sphere receives less than 10% of the budget? And as a matter of fact, like, more than 60% of municipalities expend their budget, the equitable share, on salaries and just operational things, not on things that they impact on the people. Don't you think that fundamentally we should revise the base principles that inform division of revenue? Because
thank you.
In the current form, it causes inherent underdevelopment and poverty at municipalities.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, you're surprised. I thought you're going to quote from Isaiah 6, "Who will go for me, who will I send?" Isaiah 58 is one of my favorite scriptures, but let's just bear in mind, when you speak about rebuilding the walls, you're building on ruins, and so we know that we're at the crossroads and we are building on ruins. Now what I would like to ask you is the fiscal slippage that we're now seeing over the medium term, which to me was quite a great shock. Obviously, to address that, you were very frank. How are we going to do that? You have indicated possibly you're not going to increase taxes, then obviously we've got to look at government expenditure, reducing that and increasing the tax collection. The issue of SARS, tax avoidance, I'd ask the issues around the Nugent Commission and the media, has that impacted on the collection of tax, where you have a sense that taxpayers are saying, well, why must we pay tax when we see what is going on in SARS, as well as the issue of second issue of corruption, state capture, that we've seen widely. That obviously impacts on tax morality. The second issue that I wanted to ask you, the fiscal slippage, to what degree do you believe that the measures that you have proposed yesterday, and are you engaging with ratings agencies, to what degree do you think that you have satisfied them by being frank with a medium-term policy that has set out, to me, what is a worst-case scenario? Your engagement with ratings agencies is, to me, very important. The issue of SOCs, I am particularly interested, having served on the ESCOM inquiry. My great concern is when I see paragraph 16. We knew this. We've known it for so long. It's like, Minister, you said, it's almost like you were in a coma coming back, that you've seen all these things. We knew this in 2016 when the Public Protector indicated the State of Capture report, highlighting prima facie evidence against ESCOM. Nothing was done. That is my biggest challenge. We sit now with the Zonda Commission, which is great, another 400 odd million to the commissions, but we're sitting with money that can be collected now. Surely, government needs to take urgent steps in that regard. We are not satisfied. I sit on the Justice Committee as well. With the presentations we get from the Hawks, from the NPA, they are still looking at the Stena dairy matter, which is important. But there's no progressive action.
at least Parliament, the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, cross-examined McKinsey, and they repaid R1 billion to Eskom. So we need urgent action, and I'd like you to assist, because it's a dual thing. It's the executive chair and it's Parliament. It's our oversight. Why are those funds not being collected? Minister, as a director, or former director of boards, surely the Companies Act needs to be applied with SOC directors. They need to be declared delinquent directors, and they need to be declared that they've breached their fiduciary duties and held personally accountable. Can government not do that as well? Thank you, Chair, from my side.
Thanks, Chairperson. Minister, so much has already been said, so I'm just scrapping some questions here. But I don't want to just duplicate myself, so I will not use or say.
Give me your 2 minutes. Okay, fine.
Well, I'll use 2.5 after. Okay, so not to duplicate what has already been said. You know, Minister, with due respect, but regarding the serious governance challenges that are currently experienced, and National Treasury has alluded to this, you know, financial year 16, 17, 18, it's just ongoing rhetoric that we keep reading about, listening to previous finance ministers have alluded to this, and you have just alluded to this yesterday. Now, not so long ago, very recently in fact, we passed the Public Audit Amendment Bill to enable the Auditor General to have more teeth to be able to address these challenges within the public sector, because this is obviously, you know, affecting business and ordinary South Africans across the board. Now the simple question is, how serious is your ministry going to be over the short-term period in really giving effect to addressing these maladministrations, especially in local government and in province? Because at the end of the day, you know, ordinary South Africans are just really, really struggling and I've had enough. So the question arises is, when are we going to begin to see some serious concrete examples of the Public Audit Amendment Bill being utilized now, effectively? Thank you, Chair. I did well time-wise.
Who's next?
Chair, thank you very much. Last year, the issue of high wage bill was flat, and again this year. And this year, of course, you have already indicated that the problem is not necessarily headcount, which means retrenchment can't be an issue that has to be considered, as already raised. But you have not necessarily come out to say these are the steps, this is the concrete plan that you are going to be implementing to ensure that wage bill is actually contained and reduced. If you could please come back and reflect, especially on this aspect regarding the plans that you are considering, that you are going to be putting in place to ensure that the matter is dealt with. And also on the issue of UIF, that is unauthorized, irregular and fruitless expenditure. You were found as National Treasury to be wanting on this aspect, according to recent reports by AG. I just want to check as to what are the issues and what are you doing about it, especially that you are supposed to be exemplary as far as this aspect is concerned, so that we are able to come back and enforce the same on other departments and other spheres of government. Thank you very much.
Minister, I'm Benko and I got a Uma Kobi and I'm Zulinda Vesa. God is the issue of what thinking is the English of us. Minister, in your speech, you said many of these state-owned companies need to be reconfigured. And then a little bit further you say, SAA is still loss-making and even more radical measures need to be undertaken. What exactly do you mean here? Do you support privatization and or part privatization? Is that what you mean when you talk about reconfiguring?
Minister, in terms of the page 313 in the book, Transport Department, there's a vehement there, or transfer, of 5.8 billion, a lot of money, to e-tolls. That seems, am I right in assuming that that's a bailout for the e-tolls? And how does that fit with your statement yesterday that user pay is very much the is still the policy? Because also on the same page, there's a reduction of capital expenditure for PRASA of 4.3 billion. So if one could get some explanation there. Minister, the country's been faced with a huge amount of consternation about a 1% increase in VAT. That was going to bring in 22 billion rand, if my memory serves me correctly. Now, of that 22 billion, 20 billion is going to pay off VAT refunds, backlog of 11 billion, and a 9 billion catch up in the current year, I assume. So of that 22 billion, supposedly there's 2 billion available for current expenditure. However, we've then zero-rated a few more items, which, if my memory again serves me correctly, are going to reduce the 22 billion by 1.7 billion. So am I right in saying then that the 1% increase in VAT has made a zero contribution towards normal funding of government? Because what this also says, Minister, particularly the 11 billion, and I know that SARS is under new management and desperately trying to fix
it.
What that means is that 11 billion of backlog of VAT refunds has put many, many businesses out of business and lost a lot of jobs. Who is going to be held accountable for the damage that that has done to the economy?
Who's next?
Chairperson, thank you. I'm covered.
Thank you indeed. Mr. Banian.
So I've got 6 minutes straight. Fine.
But just to remind members who are new, this is the initial foray, right? We're engaged with the MCBPS for the next 2 weeks and more, and even Treasury comes back, as you know, to reply to questions. So it's merely the first attempt to engage with them.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, the key refrain in your speech was that the country is at a crossroads, and I agree with you. And the question before us, as you put it, was whether we go left or we go right. But I think what is on my mind and is on the market's mind is, where do you stand? Will you go left or will you go right? And I ask that question because on the one hand in your speech you say we need to demolish the walls between the public and the private sector, which I agree with you. But earlier this year you tweeted, for example, that you believed that the mining sector should be 40% state-owned and that you believed that there should be a sovereign wealth fund, which your predecessor said was a reckless idea given the savings rate. So where exactly do you stand? I think that Parliament and the markets need some clarification. That's the first question. Second question. You said that government speaks in contradictory terms. Could you give us three examples of where you believe government has spoken in contradictory terms over the last 5 years? Then the third question. This committee has to deliberate according to the Money Bills Act on the debt levels and determine whether we believe debt levels and debt service costs are reasonable. At what point is our national debt reasonable, or shall we say sustainable? Is it 60% of GDP? At what level do you believe, or does National Treasury believe, national debt becomes unsustainable? The most intriguing part of your speech, Minister, was your reference to new fiscal anchors. Now, the opposition have been arguing for quite some time that what we need to do is to implement a debt ceiling. We are at the advanced stage of developing a fiscal responsibility bill, and before the end of term are going to introduce a private member's bill called the Fiscal Responsibility Bill, making provision for a debt ceiling. Does this mean that the Minister and National Treasury have now finally caught up with the opposition and are going to support us in our proposal for a debt ceiling? The second last question. You've disclosed in your budget book the consolidated government debt and net government debt. What is the total public sector debt in this financial year, and what are your projections for total public sector debt over the medium term? And finally, Chair, you mentioned the debt trap and the IMF. But the truth, surely, Minister, is the IMF are sort of Damocles, which you very conveniently hang over the governing party. But the truth of the matter is, if we do reach a debt trap, the governing party are not going to go to the IMF. They are going to resort to prescribed assets and help themselves to pension
savings.
Where do you stand on prescribed assets? Will you oppose prescribed assets if indeed we do get into a debt trap? Yes or no?
Wait, next. I think it's on this side now. You forgot. Oh, sorry, Gwen. Oh, and then Mr. Milo. Yes, of course. Nobody will be prevented from speaking. Sorry?
Could the Minister please explain the planned expenditure of the nuclear new build program? So it's our understanding that this had in fact been shelved. Are we to understand that the continued resources that are being devoted to the nuclear new build means that in fact we are continuing ahead with this particular program? I think it came as a great relief to many South Africans, so I think we need clarity in this area. The second question is, what has come up quite clearly in the MTBPS is the continued fragility of our state-owned enterprises. Now, in this environment, can the Minister please elucidate his views on the nationalisation of the Reserve Bank and the creating of space for a state, or the creating of space for state-owned companies to be able to register as fully fledged banks? If you are supportive of these two proposals, where do you believe that where does your confidence, perhaps, in South Africa's institutional resilience come from in light of the continued fragility of those state-owned companies? Thirdly, I'd like to make the point that I think we'd all agree that evidence-based thinking is quite critical, and the Minister yesterday in his speech expressed a desire to be led in a data-driven way. So in the pursuit of evidence-based thinking, then, I'd like to know, what are your views, such as those that have been the research that has been released by Professor Natras at the University of Cape Town, indicating that many of our labour agreements have in fact been detrimental to labour-intensive low-wage growth. Many of these labour proposals, which would have been implemented by yourself as in your earlier role as Minister of Labour, have you been now guided by the evidence, or how has this evidence impacted your economic thinking on how we should proceed? And then lastly, the question is around the RAF. And, you know, poor South Africans have obviously been squeezed quite terribly, and I think yesterday when we announced VAT exemptions, it was for the benefit of the poor. And since we've been quite guided by scripture today, it seems that what the Lord giveth, he may also take away. And it's quite interesting then that the RAF has actually, we envision here that it's in fact it needs further large increases in the fuel levy. How will this impact the poor, and what is their planned increases for the RAF or for the fuel levy that the Minister might have in mind? These are not clear. Thank you.
It's 45 seconds. That's great. Who's next? Yeah. So.
Thank you, Chair. I think my questions are more tame and will be a lot shorter. One of my colleagues to the left, I'd also like to get more information as to what the plans are to reduce the government wage bill. In the book we were supplied yesterday of the MTBPS, that did highlight on numerous pages the extent of the government wage bill, and that there is a serious concern to correct that. I'd also like to know if there are detailed plans to reduce government debt and what those plans are. I also noted from the documentation that it mentioned there is a plan to take funds away from the budget for the South African Police Service to establish a border management authority. And I'd just like to understand whether that border management authority is something that does exist already, if it's something that's going to be put in place, what it's going to do, how much that would cost, and when, if it's something that hasn't been established yet, just to get some clarity. I've also noticed that the documentation mentioned that the proposed grant to assist municipalities in financial crisis will not be introduced, and it mentioned that other mechanisms will be employed to assist municipalities. If you can get clarity as to what those mechanisms are and if they'll be suitable or in line with or as good as the proposed grant that had been suggested to assist municipalities in crisis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There was only 1 minute, 30 seconds, and Kazita was next. Do you know the order in which you are? You speak, right? Okay. Why don't we start with you and then we go then.
Thank you, Chair. Given the fact that our economy is export-oriented and import-dependent, what informs, therefore, the forecast of the economic growth to be 2.1 in 2021, given the volatility of the market? Because more often than not, we're focusing on our exports. If things there were unable to have a control, we are not likely to meet the target that are put in. What informs that? That's the first question, Chair. The second, Chair, relates to the view the Minister has on the principle of equitable distribution to provinces as a backdrop of planned underdevelopment in those provinces. And the fact that even in municipalities, some of them have no prospects of generating their own revenue, and I call them a condition of poverty. Then in that way, therefore, what is the right? I'm thinking about that question that was raised by one of the authorities, that the model they were using of the municipalities, because we can't have what I think. So what is he thinking about that? Last two questions, Chair. It relates to what I got this morning in the news, that here's a proposal of reducing the cabinet from 35 to 25. I'm not sure how true is that. But I don't want to attack that as something that is a rumor at this stage. But for me, my area of concern is the fact that he said the issue of the wage bill is not necessarily that there are new jobs created in the public sector, but the bloated nature of the wage bill at a managerial level on the mean. And what is the thing around that? The last issue is the fact that has the department ever costed the destruction of the infrastructure due to what is called self-delivered protest actions. The implication of that, of course, we are going to put infrastructure, get destroyed, what are the implications? Thank you, Chair.
President Imboweni, a spokesperson, I can tell you his answer is going to be, we're going to reduce the executive from 70 to 25 without retrenching anybody. But he'll speak for himself.
I said President Imboweni because the government numbers are ultimately decided by the president. But he did say that's not his purview. He merely offered his own view. Now, you're falling right into the mania's lap, by the way, but that's another story.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. I want to promise you that I'm very scared of the IMF because I read a book by Professor Hagin Chan, Kicking Away the Ladder. Number two is, we took a trip, a study tour to Germany and the Committee on Appropriations. We were strongly advised by the German, our counterpart, against privatization. So I just want you to apply your mind slowly when we go into those particular, because they were saying they were struggling to invest it. And you know that Germany is the most powerful economy in the EU. The BRICS story, I would like your division to prepare a paper for us on the appointment that he has already found in BRICS, so that we can apply our minds, because the decision, I think, rests with us, Parliament. You said a very important thing yesterday, that we must choose to be successful or poor. And I think we choose to be successful. The blame for our situation is on the members of Parliament and Treasury, nobody else. Because Treasury is not able to actually oversee state departments effectively, because there are systems that are not talking to each other. The integrated financial management system is something that the minister must apply your mind for. Your predecessors never addressed the way about it. You know, in business, it's necessary to listen to the internal auditor, because reports of the internal auditor actually assist management to make decisions. And in this case, Treasury never listened to the internal auditor. And I want to apply your mind on the internal management system, because that is the problem. If we had this system right, today we would be doing this. Members of Parliament will waste a lot of time making drama instead of going out to the projects and actually speaking for ourselves. We just have the two places to see the Department of Defense. You know, what you see on your report is different from what you find on the ground. And I suggest that we should spend a lot of time actually testing what we are told. We have become believers instead of actually overseers. The responsibility of oversight is not in the Single Seventh. It's on us members of Parliament. Where were we when we got to this situation? We were just mudslinging against each other. Hey, the DA is doing this, the EEFH is doing this, ANC is doing this. That is not what the Constitution has given us the responsibility. Our responsibility is to make sure that we oversee what the civil servants and the ministers are doing. Lastly, the Auditor General has released a report. And when he briefed us, he said, there is a bill that has passed that is waiting for the business, for the signature of the president to give him motive. But he said, it is bringing nothing new. It is simply emphasizing what DG did not do, what ministers did not do. It is emphasizing their responsibility. If ministers, DGs, and members of parliament can do their way, we will be in a different space. But we are very much hypocritical. We like to talk about small people, ESCOM. What about ourselves? Until we put ourselves on the line and do what we're supposed to do, we will get to the West. Thank you.
Obviously, one can't interfere when Master Tole speaks, but the next person is taking 3 minutes, whoever you are.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the intervention by the Minister on the Vaal River situation. And just say that it will be important that this process of that intervention must help municipalities around those areas, especially these many municipalities that are in a crisis in the country, that are very close to the Vaal River, to be assisted. And I hope they are part of those identified by the Minister of Culture. Let me zoom to the issues in the province in Gauteng. That from time to time we get a report that the Human Settlement Department monies are taken back to the national fiscus because of non-performance, because the business plans were not approved or submitted later. We said if a great deal of the committee that you must raise this issue here. That is that true? If it's true, the National Treasury must help. How? Why are the problems in relation to the business plans of the human settlement? The other one is that in Gauteng there's a rollout of broadband, the second phase. There's a red tape or power play between the e-government department in the province and also the sector. It will be important that to unblock or unlock whatever process problems that are there in relation to this, because it is our understanding that sit on behalf of government is a custodian of information technology in the country. So it's important that such programs are not delayed, because it also has an impact of delaying major development in the province.
Thank you. Are we done?
Okay, thank you once more for the briefing, and thank you for coming to bring us insights on this 2018 MTBPF. My entry point is in thanking and welcoming the idea of the infrastructure fund, but also the innovative methods of leveraging funding and private sector technical expertise for effective planning, assessment and implementation of the infrastructure project. Well, as Parliament, indeed, we will strengthen oversight over the 484.9 billion infrastructure budget. But what I would want to make you aware of is that the last time when we got a report from the infrastructure ministerial, we heard that they did not have an infrastructure development master plan. So I think it's something that you should follow up on, because when you have, it's only when you have this, you know, that you'll be able to measure performance in this area following that. Same applies to the last time when we met the Department of Water and Sanitation. They also did not have a master plan on water and sanitation infrastructure delivery. So if you can follow that so that we can make progress. I think we're not making progress because we don't have these plans that we can follow and be able to prioritize and, you know, follow them through as they are implemented over the 2019 MTBF period. Well, on the Giani case study, indeed the picture that is painted is really bad. Honourable Member Shopestole also touched on Free State. What we saw there was really bad. I didn't even know Giani, but we focused there. We went there to check on the backyard eradication system. It's really bad. If you can go there, you'll be shocked. You go all over, you think you see lakes. It's not lakes. It's sewage, spillage dams. All over where you go. So, I mean, it is really bad. But then on the case, on this case study, I think what you need to assist us with is the time frame. Yes, we hear this. It's a big project that needs to be attended to immediate effect, but we need time frame. Same applies to your reconfiguration of the SOEs. I think for the past 3 years I've been hearing about reconfiguration of the SOEs. Now we would like to see progress. With your new energy, indeed, that's where we want you to push, and we see progress. Actually, if you could make this one your legacy project, I think that will help you in the remaining space of time. We support the reprioritization of the 32.4 billion over the next 3 years, but then I think we have experienced a budget cut due to poor performance of national departments and provincial, but where we're sitting now, when you talk to them, the issue that they raise is that they can't deliver because there were budget cuts. So they make that a big issue. So what I think the national should do, must issue out instruction again to say, if they do not, they must remember that there's budget cuts. But also in some areas, we would like you to consult with those, for instance, provinces before you do budget cuts. Because what we have experienced in infrastructure development is that some infrastructure projects have been started, but maybe they were started late, meaning that their budget will then overlap to the next financial year, and then they also experience the budget cuts. Now, as we are sitting now, they can't proceed with those projects. So even where you do budget cuts, if there can be proper consultation and consideration by National Treasury, so you avoid this. Because some projects now have come to a standstill, they can't proceed because money was taken. And indeed, it was taken after they were warned that failure for them to use their budget, the budget will be taken. So if you can closely monitor that. And then I know that you also spoke in infrastructure development. There's this unit, I think, I don't know whether it's in National Treasury, Monitoring and Evaluation Unit. Besides the Monitoring and Evaluation Unit in the department, but also at national level. I think that one must be strengthened. Maybe you should also run a workshop for all or train all those monitoring and evaluation units on infrastructure project management so that we can experience less problems or challenges like we are experiencing now where projects have not been completed and indeed money has been spent. And then the last one that I would want to allude to is we welcome the proposed changes to grant structures amounting to 14.7 billion directed at upgrading informal settlement. Now, I think what will assist is that also National Treasury must insist on a plan, upgrading informal settlement plan, so that plan is used as an instrument to measure performance or to put pressure to measure performance. Because what you want to hear is not how this money has not how maybe provincial departments have failed to use the money, but how this money has been best used to bring a better life to our people. I'd like to see.
Thank you, honourable members, for your questions. I've subject five questions because there were sub-questions as well. So we will give ample time to the Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, and the team to reply. 2 billion rand annually is being spent by government on capacitation. You will find it in the presentation of the national budget briefing documents. But then the AG comes with a report at the end of the year and says, this is what you are doing, but we spent 2 billion rand to help you. The fact of the matter is, when you attend the workshop, you don't go home before you write the test. Do I understand what I was trained on to go and implement, like the college at the Reserve Bank? It's the same recipe that we can follow. Honourable Minister, over to you, Deputy AG.
I also have a right to ask this. So I'm timing myself. Here we start. Very quickly, Minister, I think many of us welcome the candor with which you addressed the issues yesterday. You didn't run away from the stats, nor you massage them. But also the head-on confrontation about mismanagement, wastage, fruitless expenditure, and corruption. So, you know, that's really welcome, but obviously it's not for you alone, for the National Treasury, government as a whole that must deal with that. But you'll be held to account because you raised the MTP. But we wish you well in that regard. And despite the numbers, what is striking though is, comrades, colleagues, over 60% of the budget over the MTEF is still allocated to basic health, education, etc. services. That's quite remarkable, actually. But the thing that strikes us is 24.7 billion deficit for this year. How is that possible? Our committee monitors us every quarter. How is that possible? Master Tole, you're right. We must take responsibility for where we are as Parliament. Are we exercising our oversight role effectively or not? What it does mean is 20 billion, Comrade Minister, Deputy Minister, Acting Commissioner, 20 billion is VAT reserve not given. That means that when SARS appeared here every quarter,
it implies, we have to check on this, there were Muslims presenting the figures, and if that's the case, Parliament needs to actually look at this and take decisive action. It means, Minister, that SARS was possibly misleading us. That's a very serious matter. Then we'd like to communicate, Minister, we are not reckless, we're not emotionally driven, we're not populist, but it is reasonable for us to listen to the public out there. And as Parliament, we have no choice. As the executive, you have a different vantage point from seeing this. Parliament, we have no choice. There are people who come here and plead with us, don't increase the VAT. And they don't just come here and plead. They come with scientific arguments. There were economists that came here. And to be quite frank, many times, us, the members, the majority of us felt that the NGO economists were presenting very credible arguments. And Treasury was flustering. So there's no emotion here. If you're chairing the committee, you will see for yourself, Minister. Right, so what we are saying is, we hear you when you say you're making available money, 1.2 billion, I think it is, for sanitary pads and flour and bread. Welcome that. But what we ask also, and I've got 50 seconds left, what we ask is it not possible to look at more, over the budget period down the road, more targeted expenditure? Your own panel that you appointed said targeted expenditure. So we'd like to ask, apart from sanitary pads in school, what other targeted expenditure is there? On illicit financial flows, we're quite disappointed. Because if it's illicit financial, if we dealt with corruption, the wastage you talk about, IFS, for what it's worth, it claims 50 billion a year, right? If it's true, we don't know. We would not have to, the unintended consequence of what we're doing, not that it's intended, is that for the mistakes government, the majority party, other parties, parliament has made, the effect may be that we are making the poor and low-income earners bear disproportionate responsibility for this, and we cannot. On SAA, we believe in private partnerships, equity, a variety of engagements in the private sector, but the view of the ANC in this committee, at least the finance committee, is 51% must remain in state hands for the reasons which I think you're familiar with and the NEC has discussed. On the issue of the wage bill, and I'm taking extra 30 seconds, others have done so too, and I'm about to finish. On the matter of the public sector wage bill, we hear you, we've raised it, but obviously there's been concerted engagement with the union. Thank you. So I've done it in 3:44. I took 44 seconds, which is many, many people of you came to that. Thank you.
We used my time as well.
44 seconds, beyond 3 minutes, which is not bad. This input, right. Over to you, Minister, and your team. Minister, just to inform you, before you start, Minister, just to explain, you will not be able, needless to say, and members who are new, please understand, to reply to every, it's a shopping list, right? So you'll pick up the thematic issues, and then they complement within 7 days, before we do our reports, they answer every question, and where they don't, our researchers follow up. So other questions will come in writing to all four committees within 7 days. Thank you. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much. Let me try and deal with a few things, and then the rest, as you said, will come back to you. But there is the issue of the SARS issue that I think we should deal with now, so that we don't keep things hanging. And I want to leave you with this thought on SAA, just a thought, and then we can debate the issues later. And the thought is put in a rather provocative manner. Who flies SAA? Is it the working class? Or maybe a component of the working class, the shop stewards? But the working class mostly use trains, taxis, Reavaya type things, so should we not be focusing most of our attention on making sure that those things work? It's a provocative question. I know MPs fly SAA, but the there was an airline that failed in Switzerland. It's called Swiss Air, and they closed it down quite unemotionally, straight to the point. Close the thing because you don't know how to run it. And after closing it, a new airline emerged called Swiss International. It's mostly run by Lufthansa, actually. So the question does arise,
I, wearing my previous hat as an investment banker, I doubt if you're going to find an equity partner who's going to come into SAA in this current state. Because as an equity partner, I have to immediately assume a debt of some 21 billion rand. Nobody has that kind of money. With existing contracts with the pilots, with the service providers who give us the biscuits and cheese in the plane, people who supply water at inflated prices and everything, with the X percentage of staff who every day are not at work, they're on sick leave, but when you go and visit them at home, they're not sick, and so on. It's what word did I use yesterday? It's also a cesspool of something. So I leave you with a thought about how can we reconfigure an airline, because we need to think out of the box. I'm not suggesting immediately that you close it down. I'm just saying let's think carefully about it. Small point but big, that you mentioned about capacity building workshops at expensive hotels. People go for three. I see it next to where I stay in the Mahawastu. There's always lots of provincial government municipalities always having workshops there.
there. I think your facial expression is more evocative than yours.
Yeah, because what I see there is mostly parties taking place than workshops, really.
You're not saying here, but
you've been part of it, by the way. Oh, you're part of it as well. Sorry, I apologize for that. So, I think we have to revisit how this capacity building workshops are done. Then I want to raise a conceptual issue, and then again, we have time to talk about this. A colleague of mine at Stellenbosch University, at the Stellenbosch Institute for Advanced Study, once said to me, why do you folks always want to solve complex problems by the lowest common multiplier solutions? So I say, what do you mean by that? It says, for example, you think that because there's a problem of shelter in South Africa, you're going to solve that problem by building more houses. I said, yes, of course. Is that so? Watch out what happens when you build more houses and people still have a shack next to the house. Because you've got economic issues. You're trying to solve a broader socio-economic problem by just looking at one thing, which is housing. And yet it's a complex set of interrelated problems. So I said, but you must solve something. So, for example, I was not here. The DG and his team will answer for themselves about this. I wasn't here when they thought about upgrading of informal settlements. I was not there. Because the question is the current location of specific informal settlements ideal? Is it ideal where they are? Shouldn't we think more boldly? For example, the way they thought about issues in post-war Europe, you immediately put investment into a number of high-rise accommodation units, which really in Europe, in Britain, for example, which I know better than Britain, those have been gradually phased out as people have settled down and people then go into bungalows. Do you think that is started by the construction of bungalows in a crisis situation? Not meaningful at all. So we have to think more. Rather than upgrading, we're probably better off using some of the money by building 4 or 5 high-rise buildings. It's a short-term measure. But I'm sure DG has thought about it. But I also ask you to think about it a little bit more. The rest of the issues you raised are very important, and I think we'll come back to you about some of the answers, including the nuclear build program.
and Honorable D.A. About the sovereign wealth fund, mining, and so on. That's a nice ideological debate we're going to have. I can see I'm going to have fun here. But we can debate that outside the yes, but generally we do have a serious problem with the role of the state in the economy, very important role. Our state-owned enterprises play a huge role in the economy, positively or negatively, and I think how we handle them is very important. I think that we should bear in mind, by the way, that the National Treasury is not the whole of government. So the government minister is responsible for different things. They can answer for themselves much better. We, of course, do craft an overall economic framework that we must debate with the colleagues about. But when it comes to individual areas, they are responsible for that. And it's coordinated at the level of the presidency. So some of the questions you're asking us are better answered by the presidency. But our job, because we collect the revenue and we have to allocate it, is to debate with the colleagues about a variety of issues. So the Department of Public Enterprises, I think, will play an important role in the debate about state-owned enterprises. But there are many of them. Because you see some at the national level, then at the provincial level, and then at the local level. And if you put all of them together, it's a huge number of state-owned enterprises. And I think...
Chairperson, it's not a point of order. I wonder if the minister could explain which question he's answering.
Oh, number...
Firstly, he's trying to be witty, but secondly, he is correct. The ministry is answering in general. They aren't specific questions. It's unusual in this committee. But that's fine, because we will get the written answers. This is the initial foray, but the member has a right to ask him to say what he's saying. But
you have a right to reply.
Yeah.
Specific questions are you responding to? And then you reply. I mean, you...
They are main, yeah.
With a retort.
Oh, okay.
He's trying to say, you're all over the
place. Oh, I see.
Yes.
Oh, I see. You don't want this philosophic conversation. It's fine.
He wants to mention his name.
Oh, I see.
He's a very important member of this
one. Then he reports back to his chief whip that you answered his question.
Oh, I see. No, I noted about 50 questions. So I didn't write the names of the member. But now I know, I think I need to some capacity building. So I don't I think the other colleagues in the other departments really should be able to deal with. The final issue that I might make reference to, and then the DG can really will give you replies to this because we've run out of time. On the ratings agencies. I would appeal that when you talk to them, really try to weigh the national interest head without spin doctoring. So we have been in conversation with them, and maybe DG could tell you more about that. But we don't want to irritate them, but we don't want to hide anything from them. Because remember, these are service providers. Anyway, they'll watch carefully what I say. Maybe I should, DG must say something about that. And then I'll come back to you in numbered form. Thank you very much.
Okay, over to you, DG. And Pierre, you can come in whenever you want. Yeah, if you want to say something.
There's no intention of engaging the minister on this matter. I think the question of upgrading of informal settlements is a very complex one in South Africa. Because because it flows against the poor human settlement planning vis-a-vis the socio-economic situations as they pertain to rural vis-a-vis the urban areas. And the backlogs and so on, and the need at a certain point in time to accept that children do get born in those rural settlements. They are human conditions that are supposed to be kept. So some of these interventions are intended, some may be permanent based on where the informal settlement is. So it's that sometimes this upgrade is necessary, they are practical, but it does not move against the ideal issue that the minister is going to come.
Thanks, Chairman. Mr. Chairman will answer some of the questions related to municipalities and problems.
I will answer the question on that was asked by Honorable Shibambo and his leaving. Okay, so this was the question around whether we are giving municipalities enough in terms of their state of finance. I think the fiscal system is actually based on what powers and functions they have and each sphere of government have. And these powers and functions would have to do with in terms of functions that they have to perform and in terms of the revenue raising power. So when you compare provinces and local government, the powers and functions to raise revenue are much higher in the local government because they deliver services that can be charged, property tax, and then we look at provinces, they deliver education, health, which are largely just free in terms of that. So the fiscal framework does take that into account. And when you take that into account, actually local government accounts for 25% of the whole fiscal framework. Obviously, we are also aware that there is inequity in terms of potential or ability to raise revenue. So that is why how we do our equitable share of is also meant to make sure that more can be allocated to those municipalities that actually do not have revenue raising power. So some of these municipalities will rely 90% of their, you know, funding from equitable share and cash. So I think the biggest problem that we probably have in the system now is non-performance in the revenue raising thing. As you know now, most of these municipalities have got around 143 billion that is uncollected revenue. And I think that is the major issue that we are actually faced with, which part of the interventions that we need to do in the basic municipalities is really to look at that element of revenue raising power. But it's also to look at the operational efficiency. But sometimes you find that a lot of this money actually is tied into administrative costs like personnel and not necessarily into service delivery. So those are the things that we want to look at. So the other point is about the municipal recovery grant that we said we are no more going to So when we engaged on that issue, that proposal, I think it became evident that there are already many grants that are going to municipalities that are actually supposed to support them in terms of capacity. So what is actually failing in terms of how we are implementing the municipal recovery program that is mandated by the law is really around the capacity of provinces and the capacity of national government to actually drive those implementation. So what we have decided is that we will look at these grants and we can look at how we better target them, but we are also going to add money to provincial governments, to also national treasure that is also in charge of preparing the municipal recovery plans, so that then we can begin to prepare those plans fitly, but also we can also begin to support them in the implementation of those plans. Because what we realize is that a lot of these plans are not actually yielding the results that they need, and we have looked at the key areas that where we are failing, and we need to tighten and improve on that going forward. But
I'm just going to start with the question on the Border Management Agency. The bill is in Parliament and it's now serving at the National Council of Provinces. It hasn't been established yet because we're waiting for the bill. And basically what it would do, it will just consolidate the functions that were done by different departments, and the funding of it will come from those functions, so we will be doing a function shift. In terms of consultation, when it comes to reprioritization, I just want to put the committee at ease. We have bilateral consultations with the department, we have functional consultations, we have budget council consultation, which incorporates different spheres. So we really consult a lot in the budget process. It's not possible for us to do a budget process without consultation. And the question on targeted spending, the examples there of, there are so many targeted spending, just a few of them will be the school feeding program, it would be social grants, it would be some of the incentives in the DTI and the small businesses, the health services looking at HIV, TB, those are some of the examples. And the big one that we have will be the fee-free higher education that was implemented last year and early this year. So all of these are some of the examples of targeted spending for poor people by the state.
Sorry?
I want to make a follow-up on the issue of equitable share. At what point can I do
that? Please keep it short, colleagues.
Chair. You see, DG, we have been giving conditional grants to municipalities. It's either they've not been spending...
No, just be fair. Because, you know, you're my buddy and my convict, right? And you know how we understand it. The rule must be, if you're allowed to raise a follow-up, then everybody else has to allow it, right? So I'm fine with that, as long as we finish by 3. So what is the majority ruling? Yeah, but she's not going to finish and we'll come back to you. In fairness, Tani, if you were chairing, you have to do the same. Yeah, we'll give you the chance. If it's short, you'll have the chance. Okay, sorry.
Good afternoon, members, co-chairs, thank you. I'll just try and address some of the tax issues. The acting commissioner can talk about the plan. I mean, just on the tax issues, the first one is on tax avoidance, what is being done. Every year we try and do more and more on tax avoidance. And last year, page 137 of the budget review, we put down all the action items from the OECD G20 action plan to address base erosion and profit shifting. It covers things like digital economy, hybrid mismatches, harmful tax factors, treaty abuses, multilateral instruments. A lot of those things we're doing all the time. Yesterday we actually published new regulations to tax digital services through VAT, which is part of the Digital Economy Action Plan. We can discuss those in more detail. The 20 billion on VAT, the 11 billion is, and we try and cover it in page 21 of the HBPS carefully, the 11 billion is a reduction in the credit book to get to a more normal state of affairs. The other 9 billion is not a payment of refunds that have been held back. That's a change in our estimates for the amount of refunds that should be paid through the year. So the 11 billion is the clearing of the backlog. The other is just an estimate revision within our own books. And the RAF, there's a sentence on the bottom of page 48 about needing further large increases in the fuel levy. This was in the fiscal risks chapter. It's not meant as a policy statement from the minister. It was more a statement of fact that if we don't have large increases in the RAF levy, then there will be very large short-term liabilities in the RAF. So it's not a policy statement, it's more a fiscal risks problem. And I think that covers it. The other one was just on the SARS, and what have they been providing to the committee? I mean, just to talk for them, but I'm sure the acting commission will talk. That they do provide their VAT credit book in their annual report, so that information's there, and they have to do everything on a cash flow basis, and they have provided everything on a cash flow basis. But if the VAT credit book did go up, which we put in page 21, then that in effect means that tax collections would have appeared higher because it's done on a cash basis.
Thank you, co-chairs and honourable members. Just to reference back, if you'll see our annual report, we do report on our credit book on page 44 of our annual report. And if I look at every single year with regards to our credit book, in fact in 2016 it actually peaked at 5.9%, with VAT refunds being 33.5 billion
at that point in time. If you look at an average monthly outflow of refunds, it's around 19 billion, and that's what I'm intending to try and aim at, to bring it down to 1 month, because we believe in so doing we'll be releasing valuable monies to the economy. And coming to what Mr. Lee says in terms of obviously stimulating businesses and preventing them from closing. And I think you are aware that I address this thing very seriously. And just in terms of this matter, this has become apparent to me far clearer in the last months, just in preparation for medium-term budget policy. And we're going to clean it up. That's what I do want to assure you about. Just with regards to the co-chair's questions, what are we going to do to fix it? And I'd like to address it, because a fundamental building block for our country is that we've got to have a successful South African Revenue Service. If we don't, we're going to fail. And I really feel quite passionate that we must now fix these things. The key things, obviously we need stability in leadership. And I'm not going to go into the details, but I think you are aware of all of that, that we need stability in leadership. The second issue is staff morale. Our staff morale is very low at this time, and I think it's understandable. We have close to 200 people who've been affected by moves in terms of the new operating model. And for instance, I've got an advocate who's been simply looking at documents pertaining to legal costs and not actually applying her skill sets to tax matters, which comes back to addressing tax avoidance and all the other good things, the illicit financial flows, etc. So the first thing, leadership. The second thing, staff morale. Very importantly, obviously we've got the Nugent Commission, which is ongoing, and there are matters flowing out of that and flowing out of the Davis Tax Commission, which addresses governance. Because at the core of a failure of an organization is a failure to deal with proper governance. And we have to fix that and make sure we cannot land in that boat again. Very importantly, taxpayer trust or in the tax system and taxpayer morality needs to be addressed. And there was a question with regards to tax compliance. There has been slippage in compliance. If we talk of personal income tax, we are fine because people mostly get refunds there. But if we're talking of pay-as-you-earn and VAT, we are seeing, yes, people submitting returns and paying their all right compliance, but where people are simply just not submitting returns is growing. And it's a serious impact to our economy, and we cannot allow it to continue. On company income tax returns, I have informed the Standing Committee of Finance where we report on economically active, we're around 40%. I don't quote me exactly on that figure. But if we look at the actual register I've got, we're at about 11%. That cannot continue, and we will address that. But the fundamental thing, we need to address the taxpayer behavior that needs to be addressed. Fundamental building block is service, and that is the further aspect, and comes also to VAT refunds. And if you go and have a look at our credit book as at the end of March, it stood at 66 billion in terms of the various tax types that they are there. I would love to see that far more reduced, because ultimately we're releasing money into the economy. The biggest chunk of that is VAT, but second to that is actually income tax. And it's something that we need to deal with fundamentally. The other issue which is just highlighted is the issues of system modernization, and I'm sure the members have been very much aware of what's been in the media in the last week, and we'll address that. And lastly, just and very importantly, is proper skills development. We need more skilled people in our organization who are able to tackle tax fraud when it happens. And that is our intent. That's in a nutshell, co-chair, to your question. And we're trying to fix those things. It won't happen overnight. It's a big ship. There's certain short-term matters, medium-term and longer-term. And while I'm here, I intend to do what I can to fix it.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just one or two, a few points. We do engage as is practice every year. As soon as the budget is over, like yesterday, we engaged with Moody's and S&P. This morning at 7 o'clock, we are engaged with Fitch Ratings. And basically, these three engagements with them is for clarification purposes. For them, they've got the documents, they ask questions, similar questions like we're engaging the committee with today. For their understanding, later on, obviously, they will then issue their own sort of opinions as to what they think about the budget, and that will be made public.
two of them indicated that they will be doing that, and we are waiting. We are waiting, but it's the same issues. Are we able? What is the forward-looking view of state-owned companies? Do we think reprivatization will give us the benefits that we need? State-owned companies and their future. What is the view, etc. So we engage with them. Our team currently is today, tomorrow, and Monday. We are doing the local roadshow because remember we go into the market and borrow 800 billion every year through essentially treasury bonds. So we have to keep that community of lenders and investors informed and happy. So our team is currently doing that. So when we report in writing to you, we'll obviously be more detailed in some of the engagement that we have on this area. We'll give the committee the time frames, I think, for both where we sit in our engagements with the Department of Water and Sanitation for both Giani and the power system. We went to the committee last week in terms of our forecasting, and we were quite detailed in terms of how and then the challenges and shortcomings and the fact that important. What Minister did not say, but he was able to say to the press conference yesterday as they were engaging with it's important that we give this view that we are looking into it. Sometimes it's important to just give a range because we are then pinned to a number, and if we don't read that number, so we will modernize because other people are doing it out there, and we'll do the same. In terms of now, there's an important question that was asked about. We are going to have to exercise certain responsibilities as a treasurer on other departments, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful, etc. I'm quick to separate the two insofar as a departmental inward challenge that we have, because we also have human beings and people, and then that's why example that I gave last week about part of the 700 was a simple thing that the memo was not found when it was. We're looking for it. But we cannot not do our work in terms of what's required as playing an oversight on other departments. That we should continue, irrespective of the challenge that we may have ourselves. It's important to, because if we stop and then we focus on ourselves, and we may find one, because clearly I think, we'll be resolved, but we'll continue both, clearing, questioning, identifying what could be internal challenges, and clearly, members are aware of that. Just Honourable Mayneal asked something very important. We are a learning organisation. We've been at it from 1994 in terms of how we modernise the way we do things. A few years ago, we were never talking about primary deficit. We were only looking at the budget balance. That was what was informing 10 years ago. We talk about things about expenditure ceiling. We came at some point. Now, I think as continuous scholars in economies, continuous, and we now talk about, we have to continuously bring evidence-based decision-making into our budgeting framework and our funding framework. So if in terms of our reform, we come across a need for us to set a debt ceiling, which we can agree and convince ourselves that is the right way to go. The discussion, for instance, last week in Bali, low-income countries are falling back into the same debt trap that they were in some 20 years ago. There was this something called the HIPIC initiative. HIPIC initiative was about highly indebted poor countries and the debt sustainability thereof. So now, countries are going back to the IMF and saying, we thought we had addressed the challenges of low-income countries, but now because those countries are fine, they are developing new debt instruments because they can play in the market, and there are new players who begin to borrow, who begin to lend. So what I'm saying is that we should allow ourselves to develop as we've always been doing in terms of bringing new things and choosing to understand new phenomena and how countries do things and how the subject of economics evolves and public finance management evolves. And that's a continuous thing because research is ongoing. The rough issue is quite important. We have got, and something that we started doing 2 years ago, from page 43, we've got a fiscal risk statement that, again, is a reform that we introduced. We never had it before. To say, these are the risks facing South Africa. And we've listed all of those, including RAF. The contingent liability, I mean, in excess of 200, 300 billion, almost 250, 280 billion rand. So, and we've got the RAF bill on one hand, which is trying to address that. So, again, the RAF bill is in the system, and we hope with the new innovations and new approaches that we want to do, we hope Parliament will be able to, at the right time, to finalize the RAF bill.
Thanks, Chair. Probably, I think the DG is right. First time they can seek policy, it doesn't mean somebody else should take policy. But must minimize sickness in policy, so that police are always, or maybe the fact that they are criminals, they work for police. It doesn't mean that somebody else will take over that job, but it's important that there must be no criminal in the police system so that the credibility is actually sustained. I think that's what we're saying. We don't want to see any regularity in treasury, but it remains our job to make sure that that all of them is done. I think in a nutshell, that principle stands. On the issue of, one of the big challenges is that this question has come now in the day, that okay, you're going to spend so much money, how are you going to be sure you're going to spend it or not? If you look at the infrastructure spend, I think the DG have actually put one point in that. 625 million is being put to develop techniques and skills and capacity for design and whatever project. But also, the president has proposed a delivery protocol unit, where there will be oversight, not just implementation of project and planning, but it's going to be a multi-stakeholder oversight. In other words, we are accepting that there have been weaknesses in our system. Now, the current approach now seeks to say, how different are we going to do it now? And these proposals of the over-delivery unit are demonstrating that. They are beginning to say, you cannot kill an institution like SANRAP, because that institution has got a track record in actually implementing effectively. So the approaches are sending a message that we want to work differently. Although I do want to say, if you look at the stimulus, one of the challenges is that there are specific line departments that have specific roles, be it in agriculture, in telecommunication spectra, be it in tourism. It becomes important not just the treasury to oversight those departments. It's also the oversight committee what to call role. So here's the stimulus. What is this department what to call doing? In other words, the oversight work, it needs to be capacitated beyond the treasury what to call treasury department. A tricky question which was raised, I think, by Honorable Mina, which at times can be an ideological question. But I just wanted to throw one or two things without giving a definite answer. That when do we say that is sustainable? The number of factors that we take. And I want to argue, each country has got this unique what to call situation as far as debt sustainability is concerned. There can be no general statement that a debt of that particular level is whatever, because a lot of factors come to play. Be it the spending composition, its purpose. What returns do you get from that expenditure? The redeemability of what to call of debt, be they to foreign creditors or internal creditors. In other words, there's a number of factors that are in play. And then each country has got its own unique capability. And then the other issue is that, I've spoken about the issue of the construction side and the oversight mechanism that is what to call. I think those are the few issues that one wanted to add, and then dare say that in response to the chair, detailed protocol answers will be given. On SARS, I just wanted to make that point. We are comfortable with what the acting commissioner is doing with regard to dealing with all the incidents that led to the negative situation. The plans, correcting issues of dislodgement, of heads of units, working hard to create conditions that retain skills that actually went away, reviving projects of the large focus on large business and so on, to create an environment where revenue is easily is able to generate.
And Nati hasn't asked a question. Let's take Nati, Tandi, and David, right? And then we have to round up, okay? No more than a minute, Tandi, to be fair. Nati will give you full 3 minutes.
Tandi, go for it.
Chair, it's only equitable share. You know, we can go around in circles if we don't address how municipalities have been utilizing this. I think the time has come, DG, where we're going to pay the service providers directly and find a way of staging expertise that are going to ensure that all those infrastructure programs that these funds are meant for are able to utilize. Because let me say this. The more you take back the money and give lesser budget, the more it affects service delivery on the ground. So it's not the municipalities that are suffering, it's the people that are supposed to get the service. Therefore, there should be a creative way of trying to. In fact, some of them has utilized that money for unintended programs.
Okay. Thank you so much. Nati, you've got your full 3 minutes.
No, thank you very much, Your Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Now, for me, I just wanted to make one observation, and I think at a later point I will pose the question, not necessarily for Treasury to respond to it. The one observation I arrive at is that Treasury is on the one side and we are on the other. And I think that's an undesirable situation under the circumstances. You know, you can't drive your car with all the indications that it's overheating, and you keep on driving. And when it blows up the head gasket, for an example, you blame the car. It just can't be a correct thing. That's the point. Now, I'm using this example precisely because I think there are critical points that have been made in various sort of interventions and inputs at an earlier point. The one input is, of course, what Honourable Member Shop has said, as well as the Minister in some portion of it, and I think other members as well. And therefore the question is, when do we begin to have a dedicated session on issues of, and when will we do that? A dedicated session around issues of oversight and accountability, as well as project management. Because at the center of everything that has been said, in whatever manner that things have been said, those are the three critical issues that we need to begin to come back to. And I think lastly, we need to work out a different model of approach altogether in dealing with some of these particular matters. So when I said that Treasury is on the other side and we are on the other, it's because we stand aside and we throw questions at Treasury and we think Treasury is going to provide answers, and I don't think it's them who are going to provide answers. In fact, it's us who are going to provide answers eventually. So I would think yourselves, honorably, a chairperson, from a leadership point of view, start thinking about, you know, an approach that we need to embark on. You know, of course, I'm not talking about today, I'm talking beyond today, in terms of what are the key critical issues that we must come back to, policy issues, for an example, discuss them, but also develop a recommended sort of approach to begin to deal with some of these particular matters. Thanks very much.
Mr. Mania, and then that's it, and then we'll round up here.
Thank you, Chair. I can't help noting that the Minister doesn't seem to be able to handle the ET. Faded away.
Look, because it's the first time around, I want you'll communicate this to him, right? The norm is the Minister has to stay till 3 o'clock, right? But because it's the first time, because this is the more very important thing for the Minister, right? We don't have a Minister leaving, but we did allow for a previous Minister to leave under specific circumstances. Because it's his first time, yes, but in February, it won't happen. It's not fair. It has to be, you know, his PA must remember that. Thank you.
Thank you. Just read your issue. Just three quick. quick sort of follow-ups. I just wondered if the DG could be clear in his answer. Am I correct that you are considering now implementing the debt ceiling? That's one of the policy options that you are considering, a debt ceiling, and that's related to the minister's reference to a new fiscal anchor. So literally a yes or no answer. The second on the reasonable levels of debt, I think the minister is absolutely...
Please simmer down. The rules of parliament are clear. He's entitled to take his full minute. Nobody's going to stop you.
Thank you. On reasonable levels of debt, I think you're absolutely correct. There are various factors that apply to different countries. I'm not interested in different countries. I'm interested in this country. Treasury must have a view on what level of debt is reasonable and what level of debt is sustainable. Could you just tell us what it is? Thank you. And last, please, what is our public sector debt?
No. He took his minute. Suddenly, you're out of order, right? Please, don't.
What is? I mean, we need. Surely, Treasury knows what the total public sector debt is.
You made your point, thank you. Right. You made your point, Mr. Mania.
Just tell us.
Yes, fine. That's okay. We'll just answer them and respond to Tandy and Nat.
Two things. Our debt.
5 minutes.
Our debt to GDP. GDP of South Africa is like 4 trillion. That's GDP is now at 55.6%. That's the number, so we can work out. That's the number, so someone can work it out. So that's what it is. And then we owe different. We owe banks, we owe lenders, it's a range of people that we owe. And we are not, and I try to answer it. It's not how we work in the Treasury is that the top point we say now is the time to consider the debt ceiling. No. We've got young economists, we've got a group of economists, doctors, whose job is to think as to what new ways and methods we approach our work. Now, I don't know what to say. If someone says debt ceiling is about this, and we have a concept, and we discuss all the time, by the way, I mean, we don't spend a week. We sit for hours in those two boardrooms, we debate, and then we... So if someone, we've got so-called policy group meeting on Monday. I wanted it to be at 7:30, but it says 8:30. 8:30 morning, every morning, we have circulated, by Friday afternoon, we circulate an agenda for Monday morning. And the standard agenda. If we have to get the economic policy division, Ian Stewart from budget, or Duncan from say, we want you to talk about economic, we talk about it. So we have discussed that thing. It's not that we are considering, but it's being discussed.
There are two issues which I think Honorable Charlie raised. One issue of service provider. I think we did speak about looking at calling an out system and so on, so that we have got a transparent view of what is happening everywhere, so that we're able to say, tap on the shoulder. I think it's a matter that we need not to 100% depend on the department. And I would actually follow the DG on the issue of that. To me, I want to argue, that's why I'm taking an ideological question, to be honest with you. I want to argue that what you want to do, what your capacity is at any given point will determine what debt ceiling I'm supposed to do. Can you imagine? I it might be good for me to owe 100 rand this coming 2 weeks. In 6 months' time, I might be okay for 1,000. So it's a very fluid issue, but I think for a particular period and a particular circumstances, maybe DG is right, let the calculations be done, let's not give a direct answer to it.
Right, fine. Hang on, Mr. Mania. There are others who have to go to a 5:05 meeting. People know. And it's only 5:03, 15:05. Now, can we just agree that you will give fuller answers to... Right, can we just round up, please? Right, so they're going to give fuller answers to the questions raised by Tandy and Mr. Mania. It's fair. You've got 7 days leading to do it, right? Right, good. That settles. The two chairs might want to say something quickly, a minute each. Point of order. No,
appreciation for the presentations. Next Tuesday, we are together again getting the briefing from the PBO and the FFC. Wednesday, public hearings, and next Friday, reply by the National Treasury to the hearings input. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
I'm of the view that the MTPPS has tabled numerous interventions for putting the economy on a sustainable path, and the Honourable Minister was right in saying that we should avoid going to the IMF, which is not desirable. We don't want to be kept up. All right, again, what is required after this now is a concrete action of all the good measures that have come up from the brand new minister and his team. And indeed, we have made a noble commitment to our people, that of having to deliver on the MVP goals. So I think, thank you very much.
On that note, can I just say nothing? That's exactly the note. We have repeatedly discussed this here, that Parliament also has to be far more effective in our oversight. It's no use dumping it on the executive. Ultimately, it's Parliament that doesn't do its job, including our committee, effectively enough. So I want to come back to this acting commission. We want an explicit reply to this in writing. How is it that you've arrived at 20 billion VAT returns, Comrade Deputy Minister? It implies that, comrades, you must think about how can this committee not know that? And why does this committee not know that? It hit us very hard, right? It also affected our approach to the VAT return, a VAT 1% story. So the question really is, what can a committee do beyond looking at the statistics you bring to us as entities? Now, if SARS has been misleading us, that's a matter we should refer to the Speaker. But let's see. Maybe we will see. I don't think so. So, Tandi, I'm asking the committee over the next 14 days to think about it, and you can have in the Standing Committee of Finance half an hour on that topic. Right? That's in our committee, not the joint committee. Secondly, can I say, Comrade Minister, this new approach to project management, it's been raised in this committee repeatedly. In fact, your Michael Sachs put it here on the agenda initially. We want to see it happen. Not just words, but to see it happen so we can hold you to account. Thirdly, on illicit financial flows, we are deeply, deeply disappointed that's not being addressed. Mr. Kinghorn has been saying, may I say dear? Mr. Kinghorn, I saw him on one of the news bulletins, or two of them that day when he spoke. I think it was very good that he apologized the way he did to the staff that you have in SARS and to the broader public. I really think it was very good, and I found you to say so. Now I'm doing it here, openly. I think it's very good that you, but you also really held to account, right? Those are words. Yeah. So, finally, you know what? This story of BBS Mutual, we've discussed this yesterday in the debate, right? But what we're sympathetic to is the view that the minister said yesterday, we'll try to tease it out, that the services that BBS Mutual offered, that is very vital. The services that BBS Mutual offered, that is very vital, and he will engage with Saab and see what can be done about it. We want to come back to that at some stage. So we simply say, I think that's a very welcome statement. It's reasonably consistent with what our committee has been holding up to now. And on the 7th of November, to remind members, SARB, National Treasury, Hawks, NPA will all be here. We'll take that matter forward. Can I finally thank everybody, Tandi in particular, for agreeing. No, Tandi has performed outstandingly. By the standards, Tandi, you don't know this, by the standards of Tandi, Tobias, Pokolo, that's phenomenal. Outstanding. Outstanding. She didn't walk out, she didn't get up, she didn't lift her fist at me when we asked her to observe the time. So Tati has been the outstanding.